Welcome to the Leadership Conference on Charlottesville Press Call. My name is Hilda, and I will be your operator for today. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. During the question-and-answer session, if you have a question, you will need to press star and then one on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. And now I would like to turn the call over to Vanita Gupta. Vanita, you may begin.
Great. Thank you, everyone. Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Vanita Gupta, and I'm the President and CEO of the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights. Yesterday and Friday night were a tragic set of occurrences on so many levels for our nation. And there's no question that when we suffer losses or we experience very serious grievous harm to the fabric of our country, we suffer together and we must speak with one voice. It's been over 36 hours since the terrorist attack on a peaceful group on the streets of Charlottesville, and our thoughts are with the many victims of the violence yesterday. President Trump still has not issued a direct personal condemnation of the white supremacy extremists that fueled the violent extremism. It can be done in fewer than 140 characters, and his failure to condemn the perpetrators of yesterday's events emboldens these domestic terrorists and is unacceptable to the American family. Today, the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights and the organizations on the line today call upon our government leaders to take the following specific actions to ensure that everyone in this country knows that their government is upholding the constitutional protections that we have all been afforded. And specifically, we believe the following is the very minimum that our government leaders should do at this critical juncture. One, supporters of white supremacist, violent extremism, racial bigotry, and neo-Nazis should not serve in the White House or at any level of government. President Trump should remove Steve Bannon and Sebastian Gorka, who have staked hate and division from his administration. Two, President Trump must disavow the white supremacists marching in his name in Charlottesville and elsewhere personally and unequivocally. He must call it for what it is, domestic terrorism, and denounce it. He cannot hide behind the statements of unnamed White House spokespeople. And three, Congress must schedule a bipartisan oversight hearing for the Department of Justice and the Department of Homeland Security to explore in detail the precise efforts that are currently being undertaken by each agency to investigate and root out hate crimes, violent white supremacist groups, and the threat posed by violent white nationalists. Those hearings should also explore any interagency efforts designed to address these threats and to apprehend and prosecute illegal conduct by these groups and individuals. We're now 7 months into the Trump administration and more than 6 months after confirmation of our Attorney General, and during this time, hate crimes have risen exponentially. Several murders by white supremacists have also taken place in the last few months, along with a steady stream of attacks on mosques, including the recent mosque bombing in Minnesota. And that is why it's past time for bipartisan Congress to schedule these oversight hearings. So thank you all for joining. We have a group of civil rights leaders that I'm very grateful to for joining on the call today. And I will introduce each one who will speak in turn. And I'm going to start with Sherrilyn Ifill, who is the president and director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. Sherrilyn?
Thank you, Vanita. My name is Sherrilyn Ifill. I'm the president of the NAACP Legal Defense and Educational Fund, the nation's oldest civil rights legal organization. We are an entirely separate organization from the NAACP and have been since 1957, and I'm proud to lead this organization that was founded by Thurgood Marshall in 1940. First of all, I want to extend my condolences to the family of Helen Heyer and to the two state troopers who were killed as a result of yesterday's violent rally, and to extend my best for recovery, prayers for recovery for those who were injured by the violence of the attack yesterday. This is a vital moment in our nation's history, and we stand at a crossroads. This is a country of tremendous resilience that has grappled for hundreds of years with its original sin, the original sin of slavery and of racism. And over the last 60 years, this country has made bold strides in overcoming its history of racial discrimination and of inequality. We have managed to survive the deaths of Goodman Chaney and Schwerner. We survived the killing of four little girls in a church in Birmingham. We survived the melee we saw outside Central High School in Little Rock. We survived Fannie Lou Hamer's beating and the efforts of voting activists to be considered true citizens of this country. We survived that beating on the Edmund Pettus Bridge. As a nation, we managed to hold together after the assassination of Martin Luther King at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis. And we survived the lynching of James Byrd and many other individuals who have been killed and harmed by white supremacist violence. In almost all of those instances, the leadership of this country, the President of the United States, has found the words necessary to hold this country together, to comfort us in a moment of pain, to speak to our national identity, to tell us that this is not who we are, and to clearly and without equivocation condemn white supremacist violence. And so, this year, after the death of Timothy Kaufman in New York, earlier this year in March, by a white supremacist who traveled from Baltimore to kill a black man in New York City, after the death of Ricky Best in Portland and another Good Samaritan who tried to protect someone from a white supremacist on the light rail. Ricky Best was an Army veteran, had served for 25 years in the United States Army and was killed. After the killing of Richard Collins, a member of the ROTC at Bowie State who had been commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Army, killed on the campus of the University of Maryland, both in May. And after the rash of mosque attacks that Vanita just described, we have every right to expect the President of the United States to speak clearly and unequivocally in condemnation of white supremacist violence. And certainly after yesterday in Charlottesville, when America had an opportunity to see on display white supremacists carrying swastikas, carrying Confederate flags, no American flag in sight, but Confederate flags and other flags of white nationalism and white supremacy. And we watched a rally descend into violence. And we watched an individual ram a car into a crowd of people standing for equality and justice. We have every right to expect clarity from the President of the United States and from the United States Congress. At this point, we seek more than the clarity of words. We want the clarity of deeds. We expect the President of the United States to use the power of the federal government, which he has shown himself to be so willing to use since he took that oath of office in January, to clearly and unequivocally stand against white supremacist violence, to investigate hate crimes and to make it a priority of the Department of Justice, to use the apparatus of the federal government to recognize the scourge of white supremacist violence through both individuals and groups, and to make clear the intention of the federal government to uphold the nation's civil rights laws and to protect racial minorities, religious minorities, members of the LGBT community, and others from the violence of those who would try to take us backwards in time and who want to deny the tremendous progress that this country has made over the last 60 years. Many people have tried to soft-pedal this with the president since his inauguration and, in fact, since his campaign, but no more. This is the time in which we are at a crossroads in this country. We expect every leader of this country, elected or otherwise, to stand against white supremacy, to demand that the president do so, to demand that every apparatus of federal and state government use its power to stand against this kind of violence. And the reason we expect the action, particularly from the president, is because the president has been unwilling to speak clearly, and because it is the president himself, through his campaign and since the inauguration, through the Muslim ban, through the voter suppression task force, through the equivocation in voter cases, through the recent action taken around LGBTQ discrimination in court. All of these are indications that the president has been unwilling to stand on the side of those who are most in need of protection in the nation's civil rights laws. And so we have the right today to expect from him strong words, but more than words, deeds. And we will keep the pressure on until this government does what it should do and what it must do if America is to be true to its promise. Thank you.
Thank you, Sherilyn. I would now like to ask Richard Cohen, President and CEO of the Southern Poverty Law Center, to speak.
Thank you, Vanita. Ever since Donald Trump came down the escalator in that tower that bears his name, he's run an incendiary campaign that has energized the modern white supremacist movement, sometimes called the alt-right. We saw it in the support that Mr. Trump received from the likes of David Duke and Andrew Anglin during the campaign. We saw it in the ugly surge in hate crimes immediately following his election, as white supremacists celebrated Mr. Trump's victory. And we saw it this weekend in the unprecedented gathering of white supremacists in Charlottesville. We've followed the radical right for more than 40 years and have never seen anything like it. At this point, it's not enough for President Trump simply to condemn white supremacy, although that would be a good start. And it's not enough for him to call for our country to come together. His words will ring hollow until he takes responsibility for his role in dividing the country and for energizing the white supremacist movement we saw on display in Charlottesville this weekend. President Trump should apologize for what he's done, and he should follow his apology with concrete actions to undo the horrible damage that his campaign, his rhetoric, and his policies have caused. Firing Mr. Bannon and Mr. Gorka would be a sign that he's serious about changing direction. Thank you, Benita.
Thank you, Richard. Farhana Kara now will be speaking, and she's the executive director from Muslim Advocates.
Thank you, Benita. Good afternoon. My name is Farhana Kara, and I'm the executive director of Muslim Advocates, a national legal advocacy organization promoting freedom for Americans of all faiths. First, I want to extend my thoughts and prayers to the family of Heather Heyer and all the victims and their families of yesterday's horrific events in Charlottesville. Let's be clear. President Trump and members of his administration have been active participants in creating an environment of hate and hate violence in our country. Chief Strategist Steve Bannon has espoused and promoted through policy and the media heinous anti-Muslim, anti-Black, anti-immigrant, and anti-LGBT bigotry. Just last week, White House advisor Sebastian Gorka gave cover to the perpetrators of the recent firebombing of a mosque in Minnesota by calling it a possible, quote, fake hate crime, unquote. These words have consequences. Just as the president's refusal to directly condemn the neo-Nazi and white supremacist groups was met with praise by these groups yesterday. Now the president must act. First, he must personally and clearly condemn hate and hate violence by white supremacist and neo-Nazi groups, and he must disavow their support. Second, he must rid his administration of those who give comfort and support to these groups. And specifically, I'm talking about Steve Bannon and Sebastian Gorka. Until the president purges his staff of supporters of the white supremacist movement, the president's condemnation has no credibility. The presence of Bannon and Gorka in the administration is the president's silent message to extremists to continue their march of terror against our communities. And it must stop. Thank you.
Thank you, Farhana. I'd now like to ask Reverend Andrea Alexander, the Associate General Secretary from the National Council of Churches, to speak.
Hello. Thank you, Benita and the Leadership Conference, for this call. This is Reverend Andre Alexander, the National Council of Churches. I serve as the Associate General Secretary for Action and Advocacy as part of the NCC's 38 Protestant communions representing Orthodox, historical African-American, mainline, and East churches. We offer our condolence and prayers for the young lady who was murdered and others who are now healing from the atrocious attack that took place on yesterday, and quite frankly, all of Charlottesville, Virginia, and others from around the country who have been deeply impacted by this atrocity. On Friday evening, faith leaders from around the country, including two of my colleagues, Reverend Dr. Joseph Crockett and Reverend Stephen Martin, gathered at the St. Paul's Episcopal Church to pray, worship, and stand in unity against racism, xenophobia, divisiveness, and general hatred towards people of color, Jews, and Muslims. Outside of that church, during the service, hundreds boldly marched with torches, shouting hateful rhetoric, and openly carrying weapons. On yesterday, they came suited up in military gear and escalated that hate to physical violence and death. Many of these hate mongers claim that they are standing up for Christian values. The president and others have asserted that there is hate and violence on many sides. There are not many sides of this hatred. A well-known and beloved verse from the sacred text of the Christian faith says, if a person says, I love God and hate their brother or sister, that person is a liar. These people do not represent the Christian faith. The only side for those who are followers of Christ is justice, equality, truth, and love. We stood together with the Leadership Conference on Civil and Human Rights after the election and called Donald Trump to account. We asked him to repent from and repudiate the hateful rhetoric that he had fueled and used throughout his campaign, and now we see that he has continued to use that kind of language as the president. We stand with the NCC stands in support of the Leadership Conference and all the other coalition members on the three demands that have been presented, and we also call on all people of faith and those of good moral consciousness and courage to stand against hatred, and particularly the white supremacy that has been emboldened, and standing against anything that is an example of who we are as a country. We ask that you not just stand against it, but show in your actions that you stand for this country, that you stand for what the values of this country, and quite frankly, the Christian faith is, and that is liberation and justice for all.
Thank you so much, Reverend Alexander. I'd now like to ask Chad Griffin, President of the Human Rights Campaign, to speak.
Thank you so much, Vanita, and I extend my appreciation as well to the Leadership Conference for all you've done through the weekend, and all of my colleagues and the other partner organizations on this call who I know have been going 24/7 through this weekend. It's an honor to be with all of you, and we at the Human Rights Campaign also join you in extending our condolences to the families and friends of those lost, and in prayer, those who are still struggling to survive. The Human Rights Campaign joins our partners to condemn in the strongest of terms the racism, hatred, and violent extremism that was on display from white supremacist groups yesterday in Charlottesville. It has never been more clear that all of our fights against racism, homophobia, transphobia, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, Islamophobia, and more are inextricably linked because we have a common oppressor. We're here today to stand in solidarity with those targeted by these white supremacist neo-Nazis in Charlottesville and around the country. And as Sherilyn so eloquently laid out in the call previously, we know that this kind of hatred is not new. But we also know that Donald Trump, Mike Pence, and their administration have consistently appealed to and relied on the darkest and most hateful elements of society for their own cynical political gain. We have seen the results of their regressive policies and rhetoric unfold for months. And yesterday, the politics of hate erupted into a brazen act of domestic terrorism. Because yesterday, a group of radical right-wing extremists, emboldened and energized by Donald Trump's very intentional and reckless rhetoric, marched through the streets of Charlottesville, many in his name, for the purposes of inciting terror, and innocent Americans lost their lives. In the hours that followed, fair-minded Americans from every political persuasion, Democrat, Republican, and Independent alike, condemned the day's horrific events and the hate that motivated them. Except for Donald Trump. For generations, the American people have looked to the President of the United States to be a unifier in times of discord, to be a healer in times of pain, and to boldly condemn the bad in the name of the good. The fact that Donald Trump, the President of the United States, would be incapable of and would refuse to passionately, explicitly, and unequivocally condemn white supremacists, white nationalists, neo-Nazis, the so-called alt-right, as well as this act of domestic terrorism is beyond the pale. It's a stunning failure of moral leadership, and every single American today should question whether Donald Trump is fit to serve. This is a man who has criticized his own attorney general more harshly than he has white supremacists. That's not bringing America together. It's cowardice at its worst. racism, sexism, homophobia, transphobia, xenophobia, anti-Semitism, and Islamophobia are all long-standing barriers to real freedom and equality in this country. And we cannot allow our president to tolerate or even exacerbate this kind of bigotry. We stand in locked arms today and every day with civil rights groups demanding that Donald Trump, Mike Pence, and every politician confront this violent extremism in word and deed, and to rid this administration of those individuals who have long fueled this kind of hatred in America. Thank you.
Thank you, Chad. And our last speaker will be Clarissa Martinez de Castro, Deputy Vice President at Unidos U.S.
Thanks, Vanita, and thanks, everybody, for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Clarissa Martinez, and I'm with Unidos U.S., formerly NCLR. The meaning of Chan's calling for ending immigration and David Duke's "It's Time to Take Our Country Back" were not lost on the Latino community watching these events, even before the tragic turn of events that it took. The vast majority of Latinos are United States citizens, but we understand the hate and division in that message, and we know that it's not about immigration status. We also know that the words, "we the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union," from our Constitution, signal that we are a work in progress and that the principles of justice and liberty require constant safeguarding. That's why the civil rights community in our country, as we're doing today, has been sounding the alarm on the rise in, on the rise of hate and intolerance for quite some time. But too many of those who seek to lead the American people, frankly, from the State House to Congress to the White House, have hidden behind the thin veneer of dog whistle politics and refusing to call it out. But that cannot be done anymore. Charlottesville lays bare for everyone to see the consequences of coddling, if not actively fomenting hate. The thin veneer is long gone. Words matter, and actions matter even more. We not only call on the president to unequivocally denounce white supremacists, but to remove members of his administration with ties to those groups, and for him, with Congress, to command the leadership of the Department of Justice to honor its name, and with the Department of Homeland Security, indeed, to help secure the blessings of liberty for all of our people. And we definitely endorse the recommendations made by my colleague Sherilyn from LDF on the specific actions the Department of Justice can and needs to take. And we call for those things to happen now, or frankly, the lack of action and the lack of a clear statement of action risks legitimately of those silent being called complicit in the agenda of these groups and in undermining one of our greatest national assets, the strength of our diversity. Thank you.
Thank you, Clarissa. So I now want to open it up for any questions from the media, but in closing, just want to say that I think you have heard the level of solidarity that is being expressed in the strongest terms to denounce Donald Trump, his inability to have actually directly addressed the white supremacists that were marching in his name in Charlottesville, as well as the specific demands that we are making around the policies of his administration, but also of Congress. Let me now open it up to any questions that may be in the queue, and I'll call on our operator to bring those in.
Thank you. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. If you'd like to withdraw your request, you can press the pound sign or the hash key. And if you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, for a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. The first question comes from Lori Irate from CNN. We do ask that you please restate your name and your media outlet. Please go ahead.
I'm Lori Irate with CNN. And one of my questions is, the Trump administration has said that it did condemn the actions, and they feel like they have, you know, what else do they need to do? Clearly, that rings hollow to you. What do you think were the dog whistles that were thrown to these white supremacists, or generally to his base? And I just throw that out to any of you who want to take that question.
Sure. Thank you, Laura. I will start, but then I'm going to pass it to one of the members of the call. I think there is a gross distinction between having a spokesperson from the White House issue statements rather than hearing directly from the President of the United States clearly and unequivocally denounce the white supremacists that were marching in his name. He has yet to do that. And in fact, the statements that he did issue added insult to injury yesterday by trying to create a moral equivalency around what happened yesterday. And so until he personally and specifically and clearly denounces the white nationalism and the white nationalist agenda and the white nationalists who are marching in his name, anything else rings hollow and is simply unacceptable for the American people. Let me ask if any of the other speakers would like to address this particular issue.
Benita,
just one point.
Go ahead, Cheryl. This is Cheryl. Yeah, just a couple quick points. The most important and memorable part of the president's remarks yesterday were that he came out and he condemned what he called the hate on many sides. I don't know what the president's talking about, and I don't know what he saw yesterday. Did he mean Heather Heyer, whose mother said that this was a young woman who wanted always to stand against injustice? Did he mean the clergy members who stood singing and kneeling and singing This Little Light of Mine, who came out to resist the violence and the hate that was presented at this rally? There were no many sides. There was one side that was filled with hate and that came to rally the night before and yesterday to express that, and there who came to stand against that, who believe in equality and justice. So to begin to talk about hate on many sides was the president's way of eluding naming it for what it is, which was white supremacists and white nationalists who came together to express their view and who came prepared for violence, who came with torches, many of whom came armed, who came with brass knuckles, and who engaged in violence. And that's what the President of the United States needed to speak to. Secondly, he began to talk about this country and how every child needs to be able to go outside and be able to play and be with their parents. We have a violent crime problem in many places in this country. That's not what we were talking about yesterday. We were talking about something very specific that speaks into the very specific and troubling history of this country, and it was white supremacist violence. And the president's effort to talk about violence in general and to talk about hate disembodied from actual individuals and groups who are perpetrating that hate was a way of eluding what the reality is. And then finally, if you are someone who at your own rallies have encouraged people to knock somebody out and have said that you will pay their legal bills for knocking somebody out and said, get them out of here, and back in the old days we would have carried people out on a stretcher, and all of those things that you as the media saw him say at his rally, and you've engaged in that kind of rhetoric and you have advanced the kind of narrative that he's advanced about who Mexican Americans are and said that a Mexican American judge couldn't be impartial and described immigrants as rapists and denigrated African Americans and described our communities as hollowed out landscapes with no hope. If you are that person, then when you stand up to decry white supremacist violence, you have to begin first to own your role. You have to begin first to say, if you want to say, as President Trump said yesterday, that we have to begin to have affection for each other and love each other. What are the public statements that the president has made of reconciliation after the campaign? Has the president ever said that he regrets some of the inflammatory rhetoric that he used during the campaign? What has the president done that has promoted the idea of Americans standing together to love one another? He needed to speak to that. He did not enter that room yesterday with an empty slate. He entered that room with a year's worth behind him of campaign rhetoric, divisive and hateful campaign rhetoric, and policies that he has promoted from the Voter Election Commission to the Muslim ban to the anti-LGBT stance taken in the employment discrimination case. He's got all of that behind him as he stands there to talk about this. So, no, it was not adequate. He needed to say more. He needed to be targeted and focused on what we saw yesterday, and he needed to be willing to call it what it is.
Richard, did you want to add anything?
Very briefly. I think, sorry.
And could I ask folks to mute their lines if they're speaking? Thank you. I mean, unless they're speaking.
Yeah, the only point I want to make, I think the question has to do, was it a dog whistle of some sort? And I guess the point I would make is it's a dog whistle that was heard by the white supremacist. You know, one example of that, Andrew Englund. He's the publisher of something called the Daily Stormer, the most heavily traveled neo-Nazi website in the country. He had his people there. And after he heard what President Trump said, he was exhilarated by the fact that President Trump had not specifically condemned him and his movement. I'd say that's more than a dog whistle.
Thank you, Richard. We can go to the next question.
Sorry, Vinny, I'm just going to quickly add something. This is Farhana with Muslim Advocates.
Sure.
I also just want to underscore that the rally participants were specifically invoking Trump's name. And so I think it makes it even more incumbent on the president to explicitly disavow the support of these rally organizers and participants.
And this is Reverend Alexander with the National Council of Churches. I think we need him to do more than disavow, because I believe that it's possible that he may feel pressured to use the right words. He has done that in the past. We need him to show it in action. And so the three points that have been presented are all important, all three demands, not just the one. Everything that's been said already, for him to just come out and then say he disavows, because he's actually made something similar of a comment in the past regarding, eventually, for instance, David Duke. But we have not seen him express the same level of passion around disavowing or repudiating this kind of action that we see when he has expressed his hatred, his xenophobia, homophobia, and all other ways that he has expressed hatred and divisiveness and injustice in other ways.
Thank you, Reverend. We'll now move to the second question.
The question comes from Karen O'Com from the Los Angeles Blade.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call. I would specifically like to ask Mr. Cohen if he is aware of the crowd yelling, quote, "fuck you faggots," and if he could identify who those people are. I've been trying to identify those signs, and it does appear to be sort of an inverted version of the Vanguard America symbol. But I'm not sure. That's number one. And number two, you've mentioned specific killings of individual people by people who turn out to be white supremacists. And I'm wondering if after this rally, you've seen any signs that people have been sent home in order to do sort of homegrown individual assassination terrorism, and should we be concerned about that? Thank you very much for taking my questions.
Sure.
Thanks, Richard.
I'm not sure how much I can help. We actually had reporters on the scene, and I'll ask them if they know precisely who was holding those signs. I think Vanguard America has now changed its name to American Vanguard. The driver of the car who killed the person and injured 19 others was wearing their uniform. So I think, it kind of is a very, very dangerous group. But if you call me later, I'll follow up with my people and see if I have an answer to your first question, who is holding the anti-gay signs. With respect to the latter question, we have not yet, seen people disperse with the idea of hurting people from this rally. It wouldn't shock me, but we haven't seen that yet.
Thanks, Richard.
Thanks.
We can go to the third question, if there is one.
Thank you. The question comes from Rita Duronat-Kind from Asian Fortune.
Well, thank you so very much. Yes. I write for Asian Americans and Pacific Islanders, who are, of course, people of color, and diversity is more of the rule than an exception, not only on culture and language, but also on faith. What would be the lessons that they could draw from this horrific event in Charlottesville, a college, a university where a great number of them attend? And what, while they're not directly, they've not been directly sort of affected perhaps by this event in Charlottesville, but being people of color also, being non-white, what could they draw from this? What could you say to this community?
Thank you. This is Vanita Gupta. As an Asian American myself, I think there's no question that, frankly, the lessons to draw from yesterday far exceed any particular group or demographic, and it's why you have the different representatives on the phone today. We are all, as people living in this country, deeply affected by what happened and need to take a stand in solidarity. Asian Americans, African Americans, Latinos, gay, lesbian, transgender, you know, the list goes on. All of our communities, white Americans, need to be deeply troubled by the events in Charlottesville and indeed by the actions and inactions of this administration to embolden and promote racist and policies and policies that have had a detrimental effect on vulnerable communities. And so I think it is, you know, there are a new crew of UVA students that are about to join at the university. It's a very diverse, racially diverse group, and my guess is that they are all very much concerned and asking themselves about how they're going to be engaging, and not just at UVA, but at universities around the country. This is really a call to action, if anything, if we've learned anything, and that's that there are communities around the country that need to be taking a stand against the kind of division and polarization and racism that we are seeing and that we saw in full display in Charlottesville, but that we have also been seeing throughout the course of the most recent election and the last 6 months of the administration.
Thank you so much.
We can go to the next question.
For any other questions, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. We have a question from Brenton Mock from CityLab.com. We ask that you please state your name and your media outlet before stating your question.
Okay, hi, this is Brenton Mock again from CityLab.com. And my one question is we've been talking about how Trump should be responding to what's happened this weekend, but how should city leaders, mayors, city councilors also be responding to these, especially in other cities that have Confederate monuments and could be the next Charlottesville?
Thank you. Let me open it up to the speakers on the phone for whoever wants to take a first crack at that.
Vanita, this is Farhana, and I'd be happy to take a first crack at that. And
sure.
I think what really struck me about yesterday's hate rally is that this was not the first hate rally in recent days, weeks, or even months. And, in fact, on September 9th, another hate group called Act for America is organizing dozens of hate rallies across the country, specifically targeting Muslim communities. And these are rallies that they've been organizing over the last couple of years, oftentimes with people also appearing with arms, guns at their side, guns slung over their shoulder, in a show of force and intimidation as well. And so this is something where we at Muslim Advocates are calling on local officials, including mayors, to do everything in their power to create safe spaces, and to protect the safety of their residents, because as yesterday's events unfortunately tragically remind us, not everyone who's involved in organizing or participating in a rally is interested in peaceful protest. Some are coming to create havoc, to create mischief, and even kill and assault their fellow Americans.
Thank you,
Brenton. This is Cheryl.
Anyone else?
This is Cheryl and Eiffel. I hope that local officials, whether they're state or city, will actually do what some are suggesting, like in Kentucky, that they're going to speed up their efforts where those efforts have been undertaken to remove Confederate monuments, that they will understand from Charlottesville what they need to do to protect their people. I think there remain lots of questions about the way the police conducted themselves yesterday in Charlottesville and whether they were adequately prepared for what they confronted. And so I would hope that city mayors and local law enforcement would learn from this experience about the way in which white supremacists may attempt to hijack or use both the space of where these monuments are located and the intention of removing those monuments in some places as staging grounds for the kind of thing that we saw yesterday, and that they will prepare themselves. And I would certainly hope that every local attorney general and state's attorney would really make themselves aware of the rise of hate crimes and the issue of hate crimes, that they would ensure that local law enforcement is appropriately reporting crimes that occur as hate crimes so that we can properly keep track of what's happening in those communities, and that local prosecutors and law enforcement are vigorously protecting against hate crimes and vigorously prosecuting those who engage in them and working where necessary with federal officials to do so. We should remember that in March, it was a young man who traveled from downtown Baltimore to New York City with the express intention of killing black men, who killed Timothy Kaufman. Many of these events don't happen with the kind of, outrageous display that happened yesterday, but they are nevertheless devastating to this country, devastating to individuals, devastating to the sense of security of minorities all over this country. So local leaders and law enforcement must take this very seriously and prioritize this work, along with the other work that they have to do.
Hey, Vanita.
This is Chad.
Yeah. Yep.
I was just going to say,
Chad.
I'm sorry, Chad. You go ahead. I'm talking too much. Go ahead.
I was just going to be very brief and just say, I think this underscores yet again the importance and significance of White House, this administration, this president, and this vice president standing up and boldly and passionately, in the same way he's attacked a whole lot of other people in his passionate words and remarks, to condemn what happened in Charlottesville. And by not doing so, by refusing to do so, and by the white supremacists, many of whom applauded the president's own remarks, he has to do that to help prevent and to help minimize the spread of this kind of hate violence in other places around the country. And it is necessary. He is going to own every single incident and every single event that happens from this point up forward. He better stand up, and he better lead, and he better take some responsibility and show some moral leadership.
Thanks, Chad. We have time for one final question. I think there's a question from CNN queued up, and we'll take that question.
Hi, it's Laura Urey again. So, all of us have heard rumors that Steve Bannon may be on his way out. If Bannon and Gorka do eventually leave the White House, I mean, how far does that go? I know you're looking for more passion from Trump and more action, but would that go a long way toward meeting your goals of this Trump administration taking some leadership and not standing by some of the white supremacists tacitly?
Well, let me just start with that, which is there have been rumors floating around that Steve Bannon, that President Trump is frustrated with Steve Bannon, not because of his white nationalist ties and his shepherding of Breitbart and the alt-right movement, but because of his concern that Steve Bannon is a leaker. And I think, I mean, in some ways that just further adds insult to injury, as I said, that he can be frustrated with Steve Bannon because he's a leaker, but not because he's stoking a white nationalist agenda. Obviously, he was named as a strategic advisor, and that shows kind of a tacit endorsement, to say the very least, of those policies. So will it be enough? No, obviously the form and reason for which Steve Bannon is let go is going to matter, but there's also these issues go beyond two individuals. This is about an administration that through the campaigning, through the last 6 months, has engaged and promoted policies, engaged in rhetoric that has been deeply divisive, has been racially charged, and has resulted in white nationalists feeling emboldened around the country, so much so that they are literally invoking the president's name as they were marching in Charlottesville. These are issues that go to a much broader agenda. It is why that while many of us were very heartened by seeing all of the Republican members of Congress speak out about and really in many ways kind of point to President Trump's inadequacy when they were making statements about the need to denounce white nationalism head on, the fact of the matter is that as the party engages in policies that further polarize and keep certain communities out of the mainstream economy, out of educational opportunity, out of access to voting and democracy, these are all policies that belie the broader agenda that is highly exclusive and deeply problematic. And so we understand that these things go beyond one or two individuals, but they would certainly be a strong statement to begin with. And let me just pass it
Anita,
on to any yep.
Yeah, this is Clarita with Anita U.S. I wanted to emphasize that. I think that the fact that we're talking about an administration severing ties among its, you know, letting go of members in its ranks that have ties to white supremacy, I think it's part of what's alarming about this situation. Would that be enough? No. But it's a strong first step. I think it also denotes the importance of having a functioning Department of Justice that actually does its job. And similarly to Vanita's comments, the president might be upset with Mr. Sessions, not because he hasn't been battling any affronts against the civil rights in our country, whether that is against actual eligible voters or others, but because he recused himself from other matters. But the reality is that we need a functioning Department of Justice, and we are seeing right now what an important role that agency plays. We are barely beyond day 200, and again, that's why it is so important that these agencies do the job and do honor to the name they carry, and that, and whether it is Mr. Sessions or anybody else in that role, it is important that they safeguard the civil rights of the American community. So dealing with some individuals is a good first step, but we need to make sure that these agencies are working in a manner that is true to their mission and to what the American people need from them.
This is Sherrilyn Eiffel. I wanted to just say one thing provoked by the question itself and by the excellent comments of my colleagues, which is that we're having a conversation in August about whether the president will cut ties with members of his inner circle who have ties to white nationalism. This is an extraordinary conversation we are having at this moment. And so therefore we have to recognize that this is not just about any one act that this president could undertake. We're not looking to be appeased. We're not looking to be made to feel better about what has transpired in this country or even about who the president is. We're asking that we really confront what the threat is to the integrity of this country. And to confront that threat requires not just that the president take actions, but that we really have a reckoning. And that means that Congress also has to recognize the ways in which they have been complicit with allowing this environment to proliferate that resulted in yesterday. And they have to be prepared to use their authority, to use their platform to stand against this and to stand against it unequivocally. They have to show the nation that being against white supremacy and being against white nationalism and being against racism and homophobia should not be the province of a political party. It is supposed to be part of what it means to be an American and to believe in democracy. And it's about time that the leadership in our government, both in the White House and in the United States Congress, demonstrate that that is what it is supposed to mean to be American. So the opportunity that we have at this moment is to, for this terrible, tragic event, to show us all how far we've gone, how far in just a very few months we've allowed ourselves to go, and how imperative it is that we turn the corner and begin to head ourselves in a direction that's true to the promise of this country. So the president can take many acts. One of them could be separating from members of his inner circle who have ties to white nationalism. Certainly that would seem to be a bare minimum, but it's not going to be any one act. It is going to be a concerted effort on behalf of those who are leaders of this country to put ahead of their own interests, to put ahead of their partisan affiliation, to put ahead of all of that the integrity of this democracy.
Thank you, Cheryl. And I want to thank everyone for joining the call, the speakers, especially in the media, for your interest and ongoing interest in this issue. One of the concerns we all have is that as the Trump administration every day seems to be dropping different media stories that then flood the zone, that this moment where there really is needs to be a serious reckoning with these issues is going to go by, and we really hope that the media is going to continue to track and follow this story and give it the depth of coverage that it is warranted. So thank you very much. Appreciate everyone joining.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference.
Thank you, Vanita.
We thank you for participating. We thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.
Thank you.